Tears come from the heart and not from the brain. Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, so the last day of the trail was incredible, dude. Honestly, I don't think I'm ever going to have another like day like that in my entire life. Like, first through hike finished, one I had been obsessed with for many, many years, one that I wasn't sure I was going to be able to accomplish, but wanted to try for many, many years. And so it was kind of funny, like, climbing up Katahdin that last day, I felt like I should be, like, overcome with the sense of accomplishment and the sense of joy, and I didn't really feel it climbing up, and I was starting to, like, get kind of, like, psyched out about it. Like, I was just super in my head, like, why am I not feeling more, like, and then the closer I would get to the top of the mountain, I'd be, like, the more, like, upset with myself and confused, and then as soon as I saw the sign, like, straight up, it all just came out. Like, I started crying. It all just came out at once.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail, dirtbags and hiker trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute to help us out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest, a thru hiker with one of my very favorite Instagram handles, Kyle O'Grady. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Kyle. How's it going?
It's going amazing. I am so thankful to be here. Thank you for the invite. I've seen you've had some cool guests on, so it's an honor to be among that group, although I think people are going to find that I'm much less entertaining and much less successful as them.
Well, that remains to be seen. I'll let you know at the end of the episode if you lived up to expectations or if you fell far short.
It'll be fun. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
And I also neglected to mention in the intro that you are a fellow podcaster. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, my podcast is called Trail Tales. I'm sure there's some folks that have listened to it before and probably hate it. I'm sure there's some folks that have never heard of it before. I hate to say it, but it's another hiking podcast. You know, I interview other thru hikers, and not just thru hikers, actually. I talk to a lot of, how do I say this without sounding like a jerk? Just regular backpackers, for the lack of a better word. Just people doing cool stuff on the trail. And so it's pretty similar. I'm sure there might just be a little bit more profanity, but we already talked about that right before we started recording. So,
you know, we on the John Freakin' Muir Pod, we cover a lot of outdoor adventure. I firmly believe that the outdoor adventure tree has many branches, and we could spend a whole lot of time talking about the thru-hiking branch, but there's all kinds of other types of experiences out there, lots of different types of adventures. So,
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's kind of funny, like, especially on YouTube, I always, like, refer to myself as, like, a thru-hiker, which I am. I mean, I think we're going to get into that, some of the stuff I've done, but, like, I also have done a ton of just like weekend backpacking too. So like, I'm just as much of a weekend warrior as I am a thru hiker. So yeah, I just use the thru hiker, you know, badge of honor, of course, because I think I earned it.
Now, Kyle, I think it would be safe to say that there are probably more weekend warriors than there are thru hikers, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
People's schedules and their family commitments don't allow them to take, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months off to go out and hike. So you wear it as you kind of downplayed it a little bit, but I think a lot of people out there, I mean, this is who we're talking to.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I've really noticed that, on my channel too. Like, the thru hiking stuff does well, but like a lot of the stuff that, you know, does even better on YouTube is just more appealing to people, is stuff that is more general. Because yeah, like seriously, like there are way more weekend warriors out there than thru hikers. And I was a weekend warrior for years before I ever thru hiked anything, or at least anything long. And since my first big thru hike, I went back to being a weekend warrior for many years. And so, you know, I try to do both, and I don't know, it's fun.
Okay. Now, regular viewers of the podcast might notice that I'm wearing a different shirt. This is not my normal shirt.
Ooh.
So Kyle, I want you to look very closely at your monitor. Maybe we can focus in for our listeners out there who don't have aren't watching this on YouTube. What does that say on my shirt there?
That says Sawyer. I freaking love that company too.
Yes, they are a sponsor of the John Freaking Muir Pod. Very happy to have that relationship, that partnership with them. And I just got a package this morning from them with this shirt in it, which they sent to me because of our partnership. So I want to make sure that I'm wearing that and representing here on the podcast. Sawyer, a great company with some great products. Stunned silence from Kyle.
What's that? Was that supposed?
That wasn't really a question. I ended it there. See if you had any feedback on that. So there you go.
Sorry, bro. It's been a long day. No, I love
on the intro. That's all right. On the intro, I mentioned that you have one of my favorite Instagram handles. Tell us about that Instagram handle.
Where can they find you on Instagram? It's Kyle Hates Hiking. Go smash the follow button, dude. And that's also the name of my YouTube channel too. I kind of stole it from, see, every time I tell the story, I kind of stole it, but I also kind of did it on my own because I put my own little twist on it. So back when I was in college, there was a kid, I don't even know him. I honestly have no idea what his name is. I'd never met him before, but he was just like mutual friends. He was like an outing club kid or whatever. And so I saw his Instagram pop up on my feed every now and then. And his Instagram was like, insert his name, hates the outdoors. And so one day, after I had actually graduated, so a little while later, I was trying to come up with a new Instagram handle for myself. And I just thought of that and I kind of changed it a little bit. I changed it to Kyle Hates Hiking. And then so when I went to start the YouTube channel, that just seemed like the natural. It was actually my YouTube handle first before my Instagram handle before my YouTube handle. And that just seemed like the natural fit. But it's sarcasm. I like hiking quite a bit. I just thought it fit with like my style of content, or at least my style of content when I first started. And still to this day too, like very goofy, not taking it like super seriously. So that's the handle. And it's a lie. Everything about me is a lie. I actually really love hiking. I've done it quite a bit for thousands of miles.
Everything you think you know about Kyle, put that aside. We're going to find out the real truth tonight. So
we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Kyle hates hiking. And you kind of picked up that concept from a guy who was something hates the outdoors. I think there's enough difference in the language there. I think if this were in court on like a trademark issue, I think there has to be at least 10% difference. I think you meet that threshold.
I hope so. Yeah. I never even thought about that. I kind of wish I knew like who that kid was now. I could probably find him. I'm sure I've got like a mutual friend or something, but yeah. It'd be funny if he ever like saw my content too. And he was like, wait a minute, I know this kid went to Clarkson and we were there at the same time. So something funny's going on here, but I don't know. I've been very open about it that I kind of stole it from him. So it is what it is.
Well, be on the lookout for a process server.
Man.
Hey Kyle, have you had a chance to listen to the John Freaking Muir Pod before?
I listened to a few bits and pieces on YouTube. But I don't think I listened to a full episode yet. I will be listening though, because I heard you're having this really cool guy on that has this really sarcastic Instagram handle. So I'm definitely going to be checking that episode out, but I haven't listened to any other full ones, just some clips.
Got it. Yeah, that's going to be a don't miss episode. Make sure you tune in on that.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
I only ask because I want to make sure that you are aware of a segment we do towards the end of each episode called the Pro Tip Inside of the Week. That's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience better. So don't be surprised when we get there.
Okay, that sounds great.
Now, you are expected to drop trail wisdom throughout the episode, but you'll still be on the hook for that one.
Dude, I think you had the wrong guy on. I don't know. No, that's not true. No, wisdom, let's drop it. I'll do my best. No promises, but okay. I will promise that I'll do my best.
Yeah, well, wisdom comes from experience, and experience comes from mistakes. So, I mean, are you telling me you've never made a mistake out there?
Dude, I've made so many mistakes that we'd have to do so many episodes to cover them, especially at the beginning, like everybody, yourself included, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some guy out there that's like, no, like I nailed it like my first time ever backpacking, but that was not me. That was definitely not me.
Yeah, I've interviewed 230 plus people. I still have not met that person that said I got it right on the first try.
Well, if you do, you'll have to let me know, because honestly, I want to hear his or her story, because they're either totally full of it or they're just on another level. So yeah, you got to let me know when you find them.
Will do.
The Must Bring Gear Review.
Oh, hey, another feature we've been doing this season is the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Six Moon Designs. And here's how it works. Kyle, if you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day or multi-month hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Kyle, what is your must-bring piece of gear out there?
Oh, man. It's so hard. I've been using a lot of like the same gear for so long. I feel like it's all, but I feel like I gotta pick something, right? So must bring, I'm going to go with one. I'm going to say a stove. And in particular, I'm not going to choose some fancy, expensive, backpacking like brand. I'm going to go with a stove, because there's a lot of people out there that don't take stoves, and it blows my mind how they can go backpacking and not have hot food or hot coffee. I don't get it. I just don't get it. But in the stove in particular, I'm going to go with I think it's BRS or is it BSR? It's just like some Amazon brand. I always get the letters mixed up there, but it's one of those two, BRS maybe. It's just like a $15 Amazon little ultralight stove. And dude, I can't go without it. I've gone through a few of them at this point, because I end up stepping on them eventually, and bending them. But I can't go without it. I gotta have my hot food.
Nice. Kyle, I think you and I are gonna get along just fine. I think I see a lot of commonalities here. You're a podcaster, I'm a podcaster. You've made a lot of mistakes, I've made a lot of mistakes. You are not a cold soaker. I am vehemently opposed to cold soaking.
In fact, it should be illegal, honestly.
I've spent a lot of time on this podcasting just ranting about how people can cold soak. That's just, I gave it the college try. I tried.
Oh, you actually tried it, huh?
I haven't even tried it. You know, I had somebody on who was backcountry food recipes for cold soaking. And she swore, you know, this is the way to go. All you have to do is have the right recipes. You can do this. It's great tasting. It's fantastic. I gave it a legitimate shot and I was miserable after 3 days. So.
Yeah. I would have to see the recipes. I would maybe consider it. I wouldn't commit to it for a full 3 days. I would commit to it for like a night maybe and like give it a try. If I could see the recipes, and they looked okay. But dude, like the people that just go out there and just like cold soak like ramen or, you know, like rice sides, there's no way. I couldn't do it. And like last year, on the PCT, I feel like it's especially common out west, maybe, or yeah, I don't know. But yeah, there's no way. You gotta have the stove.
And it might work better if you were alone, right? If you're the only person in your group. You know, there's no group. There's just you, and you're out there and you're cold soaking. You get to camp, you eat your food. It is what it is. But when you are in camp with other people and they've got hot food going, I mean, the hot food envy is real.
Yeah, it must be. I wouldn't know if it's real, because I just never done it before. And I, like I said, it would take a lot. It would take a lot. Although I did promise in a video, like a month or two ago, that when my channel hit 100,000 subscribers, I would use the... Have you ever heard of the crotch pot before?
I have not heard of the crotch pot. So it's like...
It's total goofs. I never heard of it either until I made this video, but it's basically... It's from Gossamer Gear. I'm pretty sure it's like kind of a joke, honestly, but it is on their website and you can buy it. It's basically just like a... I think it's just like a little DCF pouch that's designed to clip onto your shorts, and you're supposed to use it to reheat your food by like stopping like an hour or two before you eat dinner and like putting your water and your food in the crotch pot and then tucking it into your crotch and then finishing your hike for the day. And like your body heat is supposed to like heat up the food. And so it's totally ridiculous, obviously. And I made a video about it, and I told my audience that when I hit 100,000 subscribers that I would use it in a video, just like, you know, as some motivation. And I just passed that goal a few days ago. And so I think I'm actually going to, although it's not quite the same as cold soaking, because allegedly it does heat up your food a little bit, but it, to me, it basically just feels like cold soaking, but even worse, because you're getting your like crotch sweat mixed in too. So I'm going to have to try it at some point. We'll see. I don't know. It's not going to be fun, but hopefully it'll make for an entertaining video. My audience can watch me suffer a little bit.
Well, Kyle, congratulations on the 100,000 subscribers. That's huge.
I appreciate that very much. Yeah, I also have to take a camp chair and hike with a camp chair too. There's like a running joke on my channel where I like make fun of camp chairs. And for the record, I don't actually hate camp chairs, but they're just fun to, it's just fun to make fun of people who hike with camp chairs sometimes. So I'm going to have to do a video where I hike with a camp chair. I'm not going to actually sit in it. I'm only going to carry it just to make it even worse for myself. And I'm going to have to eat with the crotch pot. So it's going to be probably one of the worst hikes that I've ever done. So that'll be coming sometime soon, unfortunately.
Excuse me for just a second while I write in my notes here, not to mention my camp chair to Kyle during this episode.
Yeah, make sure you jot that down. No, I don't actually hate. Well, I don't really see myself using a camp chair, but this, it's nothing personal. It's all for fun. It's all for fun.
It's a good piece for mocking. I get it. Now, let's be real about the crotch pot, because you said you're warming it by body heat. You're not just warming it by body heat. You're warming it with your nether regions.
Yeah.
Right? And I like the point about the crotch sweat. I mean, a little extra benefit right there.
Yeah, I guess. Man, I wonder how many of those they've actually sold. Like, it can't be that many. Because like I said, I'm pretty sure it's like kind of a joke, but it is on their website. Like, it is a real thing. So we'll see. I forget how much it is. I think it's like $20 or something, ballpark. Not exactly sure, but I'm gonna have to get one. It's gonna be great. Maybe I'll have to come back on and I can give you an update on how that goes.
I'll subscribe and I'll watch that video for sure.
If you don't watch any of the other ones, which you shouldn't, they're all terrible, that should be the one you watch.
I'm intrigued now. I've got to see this content. Now, Kyle, you've hiked the AT and the PCT. What was your base weight on those trails?
Okay, so I hiked most of the PCT. I did like 80% of it, just to be clear, because I know there's going to be that one guy that's like, well, technically he didn't. So just to be clear, I did about 2,200 miles of the PCT. My base weight, so on the AT, man, that was back in 2018, so I don't remember exactly, but it was probably around 12 or 13 pounds. And on the PCT, it was a little bit lighter. The PCT, it was around 10 pounds. But another thing, too, for the guy that's going to comment, on the PCT, I carried my camera. And so I usually don't include that in the base weight, because it's not something that most people would normally carry. Or if they're going to carry a camera, they probably carry a smaller one. I had, like, you know, a full-frame camera with a big lens and a microphone and extra batteries and other stuff. So if you include that, it was probably closer to 13 pounds, but with the normal backpacking gear, it was just around 10 pounds on the PCT.
Kyle, I like how you've referred now a couple of times to the hypothetical guy who's going to call and email in with comments. Yeah. I also have made similar comments on the podcast about, you know, listeners coming in and fact checking me in real time. So that must be a common occurrence.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it definitely is, but I don't know. It's also just to be clear too. Like, I, you know, when it goes back to like the PCT thing, especially when it comes to like the miles, like I plan on going back and actually finishing the rest of what I missed last year. And so I don't know, I haven't finished the whole trail yet. So, you know, I just would feel wrong saying that I have. The part where it gets a little dicey is when you talk about, like, did I earn the right to say I thru-hiked the PCT? Because I felt like a thru-hiker when I was out there. You know, my intention was to thru-hike. When people asked me what I was doing, I would tell them, oh, I'm thru-hiking the PCT. But I didn't actually hike the entire trail. So it's like, what is a thru-hike? I don't know. But either way, I'm going to get the entire trail, hopefully going back sometime this summer and finishing up the roughly 400 miles I have left.
Well, you know, I would say this about the definition of a through hike. A through hike is going from one terminus to the other terminus, right? But you are a through hiker if you through hike the long trail in Vermont from terminus to terminus. And that's a hell of a lot shorter than 80% of the PCT. So I mean, you have the Thru Hiker label, and if anybody wants to quibble with you on, you know, whether or not you truly did the PCT, well, you know, don't pay attention to those people.
No, it's there's not too many people saying that either. But like I said, it's mostly for myself, because when I do actually go and get the whole PC, then I can say, you know, again, I don't know if I'd say I through hiked it, but either way, I hiked it, you know, certainly I hiked it all, and I'm hopefully going to go back and maybe I shouldn't say exactly when, but sometime this summer I'll say, and finish it up. If all goes to plan, I don't have like all the details finalized yet, so I'm not like fully committed, but that's the goal, because it's honestly been eating away at me a little bit, having come so far and gotten so close and then not been able to finish the whole thing, which is a whole story we can get into. But the short version is fires mostly. Yeah. Had to skip some sections because of fires, and it just became quite a hassle at the end. But yeah, I'll finish it up, if not this year, then some point in the near future, because yeah, it's eating at me a little bit for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's put a pin in that. We'll talk about your PCT hike and what happened a little bit later in the show, but you did the AT in 2018 and the PCT in 2022. Sticking with the gear angle here. What changed in your gear between 2018 and 2022, or was it exactly the same?
Yeah, it was actually like fairly similar. The literal gear items themselves were different, but the models of a number of things did stay the same. I think the only piece of gear that was exactly the same, like literal piece of gear that I brought on both, was my pot, which is an MSR Titan kettle. But my backpack, I used a ULA CDT for both hikes. Obviously, the one on the AT back in 2018 was an older version, and then I got a new one before the PCT. But same backpack. And then quilt, I used a Hammock Gear Econ 30, and I used the same exact quilt for actually all of the AT and part of the PCT, but I ended up buying a new version of that one at some point on the PCT because I never washed it ever. And after a lot of miles, it was time to get a new one. And then
you're supposed to wash stuff?
Yeah, it turns out, especially stuff you sleep in, you know, you like to be comfortable and clean. Yeah, you're supposed to wash that stuff.
That could be a pro tip right there.
That could be a pro tip. Okay. Yeah, wash your stuff. I'm trying to think. I think the biggest difference was between the two trails gear-wise was my sleeping system. So on the AT, I used a hammock, and on the PCT, I used a tent. And we can get into the specifics there if you want. I'm trying to think if there was any other like major differences. Water capacity, clothing. I had a sun hoodie on the PCT. I just used a t-shirt on the AT, like a polyester t-shirt. And then shoes on the AT, I used the La Sportiva Wildcats. And then on the PCT, I used the Ultra Olympus 4s, I think was the version at the time. And so that's just a few of the differences to kind of rattle some stuff off there.
Okay. Well, I love talking about gear. And to help us talk about the gear, we've got...
It's the hiking pole.
The hiking pole. And pole, I will point out, is spelled P-O-L-L, like a survey, not like the thing you carry in your hand. And I like to explain that every time, just because I think I'm very clever, because I've come up with that. And my guests always just kind of look at me like, yeah, so what?
I'm glad just you like, clarified. I was a little... I don't know if I was confused, but when I heard hiking pole, my brain did go to like a trekking pole for a second. So
this is a 7-question survey, Kyle, that's going to help me give you a score on the sanity scale from 1 to 100, with 1 being completely insane and 100 being completely sane. Now, because you have through hiked one of the long American trails, there's an automatic 25-point deduction. So your top score that you can get is 75, which I think is reasonable.
I'll take it, dude. If I got a 75 on a test in college, I would be not thrilled, but not totally bummed. So I'll take it.
Okay. Well, that's as high as you can get. I mean, often it's much lower than that, because I'm talking to through hikers here.
That is true.
They're a bit crazy.
That is true. Yeah, we've been known to be a little bit crazy sometimes, but let's see how I do. I'm excited.
Okay. Let's see how you do. We'll start off, you know, you've answered some of these, but I'm going to ask you, what is your preference? Not what do you use, but what is your preference? These are seven questions that I want to see which side of the issue you fall on. I'll put it through the algorithm here, and we'll give you a score.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. First question. Easy question. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Oh, trekking poles for sure. I'm assuming we're talking about backpacking. The only time I don't use trekking poles would be like trail running or like maybe day hiking. But backpacking, anytime I have some weight on my back. Absolutely yes on the trekking poles.
Okay. And why is that? I'd like to hear a little explanation too.
Yeah. I think on the uphills, they give me good leverage. Like it helps like propel me, like put some upper body strength into it. And so it saves your legs a little bit. On the downhills, I think the most obvious thing when it comes to trekking poles is just like, you know, less pressure on your knees. And then water crossings are great too, because it helps you like stay more stable. So there's so many benefits. My tent on the PCT, I used a trekking pole tent. So save some weight, a little multi-purpose item, use the poles to set up the tent. So I think that's pretty much every reason. I think I can't think of any
points.
More.
You hit all the points right there. That's like, you get extra points for that.
Yes.
That
I should get, that's like if you took a test and you just like had such a good answer, you gave so much detail that the teacher was like, you get the bonus points.
Yeah, you get full credit plus some more. That was good. You hit every single reason why. And I like the way you put the leverage part going uphill. I've explained it as it's almost like having handrails when you're going up a set of stairs.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You're pulling yourself up. That's a great way to put it.
I might have to steal that. That's a good way to put it. And it depends on how you use those straps too. Like some people, I don't know how you fall. Do you like actually use the straps or do you just kind of neglect them?
I use the straps.
So a lot of people don't use the straps. They'll use the poles, but they don't use the straps. And I'm like, in order to get the full leverage, you got to use the straps. But there's definitely some people that disagree with that, because I've been told that is wrong many times in the comments on YouTube.
Well, if you do use the handrails concept, make sure you change it at least 10%. So I don't have to send anybody after you.
We'll see.
All right. Question number two, what's on your feet? What do you prefer, boots or trail runners?
Oh, trail runners, 100%, not even close.
Was that one of your early mistakes? Thinking that, okay, I'm hiking. There are these things called hiking boots. I should probably wear hiking boots if I'm hiking.
It's a very intuitive thing, honestly. Let's see. I don't think I ever went full, like you know, midway up my calf boot. But I definitely had, like, shoes that were heavier than they needed to be. Like, a lot more, like, you know, rugged, like, ankle. Like ankle height shoes probably. And I learned that mistake or that lesson rather very quickly. Except for like winter, like if it's winter, I don't really backpack much during the winter, come to think of it, but like, you know, just regular hiking during the winter, in that case, I'll bring boots if it's like going to be cold and, you know, there's snow on the trail. But if it's three season, it's trail runners all the way, all day.
Okay, you said boots that you don't wear those boots that are midway up your calves. What are those? Are those Uggs? I mean, those are pretty high boots midway up your calves.
I don't know, dude. I've seen that might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but you'll see like some big ass boots sometimes.
Yeah, we hiked with a guy a few years ago who this was his first excursion into the through hiking world, and he was wearing like, it looked like moon boots, looked like some astronauts would wear. I'm like, how is this going to work?
Boots.
Those didn't last very long. So,
yeah. And then they get wet and they don't dry out for days on end. That's honestly one of the biggest reasons why I like trail runners better is just, yeah, they get wet a little bit easier, but man, they dry out so much faster. It's very well worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know what? This is not an official hiking pole question. This is a corollary. When you cross streams, you take your shoes off or not?
You know, that is a good question. It kind of depends. If my shoes are already wet, like it's been raining, then I might as well just leave them on. If it looks like an easy crossing with not too many rocks, I'll take them off. But more often than not, I'm probably just going to leave them on because I baby the crap out of my feet when I'm through hiking. Like I do not want to like step on a rock and cut my foot. I found that even just sometimes just walking around barefoot on rocks, like underwater like that, will just make my feet feel like tender, even if I don't like cut anything. And so there have been a few times where I've taken them off, but most of the time I'm going to leave them on, and then I'm going to complain about wet feet for the next like 10 miles at least, something like that. It's usually about how it goes.
Yeah, I'm with you on that because I don't know about other people, but I don't have big thick calluses on the bottom of my feet. I have like sensitive feet. No matter how many miles I've hiked, you know, I don't prefer walking on jagged or rough objects. So if it doesn't look too difficult, I'll just keep the shoes on.
Yeah, it's probably safer too, honestly, because you're just going to get a better grip. If you like stumble or something, you're not going to have to worry about like, you know, stomping your other foot down to catch your balance and like, you know, mm-hmm. stepping on a rock or something, cut your foot again. I think it's probably safer. You know, it just sucks having wet shoes after that. But, you know, on the AT, I didn't have to ford that many streams on the AT, but every now and then, it wasn't that big a deal because half the time it was raining that day anyways, and my feet were already soaked. So it really kind of depends. And then on the PCT, you know, a couple fords there, and like if it's dry, you know, if it's the West, so it's probably going to be dry and sunny most of the time. So they dried out fairly quickly. So it's never as bad as it feels when you first step in and that cold water just, you know, rushes into your shoe and your sock, and you're just like, man, this feels like illegal. Like, I feel like I should get a ticket if a ranger sees me doing this, just because it just feels so wrong. But it's the safer thing to do for sure.
All right. Question number three, your preferred shelter system: tent, tarp, hammock, bivy, or hey, let's just cowboy camp.
Definitely not the cowboy camping. Overall, probably a hammock. I'm probably a hammock guy. On the PCT, I couldn't because it's the PCT. But if I'm on a trail that it's like reasonable to have a hammock, because some people do hike the PCT with a hammock, but you have to like be very careful about it. Like you have to be, you know, or you just have to be fine with cowboy camping a lot, especially in the desert part of the trail. But generally speaking, yeah, I'm gonna go hammock. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this shakes up score wise.
Okay, they haven't invented a trekking pole hammock yet.
I'm sure there's something out there, but that would be pretty sweet. I'll be the first one to start using it if they invent a trekking pole hammock that is sturdy enough to withstand the kind of winds you're going to get in places where there's not that many trees, and it's also lightweight too. So
you'd have to have extreme balancing skills to be able to swing a trekking pole hammock.
And you can't move at all once you fall asleep. You can't be tossing and turning. You can't even be snoring. Any type of movement, your ass is on the ground.
Yep. All right. Question number four, sleeping bag or quilt? And I think quilt. I already know the answer to this. Yeah, you quilt. Already said that.
Definitely quilt. And that's all I got to say about that.
Okay.
Quilt all the way.
And why do you prefer a quilt? Why is a quilt so much better than a sleeping bag?
Yeah. The biggest reason is the weight. I mean, there's no back to a quilt, so you're saving weight in regards to that. And my understanding is that, especially with down, if you're using a normal sleeping bag and, you know, you're laying on the back part of the sleeping bag, that down gets compressed and it actually loses a lot of its, insulating properties. That's my understanding anyways. And so it's almost like, you know, you're kind of, you don't really need that extra weight of the back of the sleeping quilt rather. So I prefer the quilt for sure. Sometimes it's nice too, because it's a little bit easier to kind of like almost use it as a blanket, kind of like spread it over you and have part of you under the quilt, part of you outside the quilt. It makes that a little bit more comfortable. And I've used my 30 degree quilts down to 30 degrees and even below a few times. And, you know, when it's around that temperature, I'm using other stuff in addition to keep me warm, like a sleeping bag liner and, you know, just thermals and like, you know, literal clothing that I'm wearing, you know, in addition to the quilts. But I've been able to stay pretty warm in some pretty cold temperatures, even just using a quilt with no mummy, you know, thing going up around a hood, I guess it'd be going up around my head. It's always worked for me.
You're just wearing all your layers.
Yeah, I just wear all my layers pretty much. And the coldest I've gone down to is probably about maybe like 25 degrees in a hammock, mind you. So it was a little bit colder. And that was probably pushing it. I was okay, but any colder, that might have been not the most comfortable night of sleep. But I made it work. I made it work.
Okay. Question number five. We've already discussed this, but you can just answer to reaffirm. Stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
You know, it's the stove. 100%.
100%.
100%.
All right. Question number six. Is life better above or below the tree line?
Oh, that's a good one. Damn. It depends on the weather. I mean, come on. It's tough because the first hike I ever went on, when I got above treeline, that was like the moment that I got hooked on it. And the moment that led to me being on this show right now. And so it's hard for me to say that I prefer below or that life is better below treeline. But also, dude, being above treeline when the weather's bad is sketchy. Lightning is one of my biggest fears hiking. And I've honestly yet to have like a really sketchy lightning encounter above treeline. I've had some sketchy ones below treeline, so I can only imagine how sketchy it would be if there's no trees around me. Oh man, I'm really torn. Can you tell? I'm really torn.
You are vacillating.
Man, I think I'm gonna go safety first on this one. I think I'm gonna go below treeline, but that is a tough one. If we're talking camping, then below treeline. If we're talking hiking, then it's toss up. It just depends on the weather.
we're talking about life. Is life better above or below?
Yeah, we're talking about life, man. Yeah, I'm gonna play it safe, and I'm just gonna go below treeline because you can still let me justify this a little bit more. You can still get some good views below treeline. There's still a lot of good views below treeline. I like a nice lush forest. It's hard to beat a nice lush forest. It's really nice above treeline, don't get me wrong, but that's not all there is to the scenery aspect of hiking. So, and it's safer to be below treeline. So yeah, I'm locking it in below treeline. Life is better below treeline.
Now, I just want to point out that if you're hiking with buddies and you don't hike far enough apart, you know, the main scene that you're going to see every day is the guy's calves in front of you.
So it doesn't even matter if you're above or below.
That's right. Space yourselves out. That's my pro tip. All right. Question number seven. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items? Luxury items like, you know, camp chairs.
Oh, God. You know, I can only answer this for myself. For my style of hiking and the things that I've done, there's a clear answer here. But just for other people, it's definitely not quite as clear cut. But for me, a lot of my hiking has been through hiking or, you know, doing some more intense stuff, not setting any records or the most crazy stuff you've ever seen. Probably even in comparison to a lot of people that have been on the podcast before, but I like to push myself. And so for me, the pack weight is more important. The big caveat though is like bringing my camera around and making videos for people. Like that's kind of a luxury item. And I've been bringing that on a lot of my hikes over the years. So that's very important to me. But overall, I think pack weight is going to be more important. And if anything, maybe a big reason why I've worked so hard to get a lightweight pack is because it gives me a little bit more wiggle room to bring things like the camera that might be considered a luxury item, but that's pretty much the only luxury I'm bringing. I'm not bringing a camp chair. Nothing else, no bells and whistles and any of that stuff. Pack weight is definitely more important.
Okay. Now this is also is not an official question, but it's a corollary. Are you the kind of guy that, saws your toothbrush in half?
Yeah.
You don't bring a toothbrush, you just use your finger. I mean, how serious are you about weight?
I've been snapping toothbrushes in half for years, my friend. I've used pliers, I've used hedge trimmers, I've used everything you could think of, just my bare hands. I'm snapping them in half 100%.
That should be a video on your pod, on your YouTube channel.
You know, my friends,
ways, all the different ways to snap that toothbrush in half.
That would be a good one. That would be a really good one, honestly. I've snapped toothbrushes in half in videos before, but a full video on how to cut your toothbrush in half, I should be the one taking notes over here, because that is not a bad idea. That is not a bad idea at all, my friend.
Lots of views on that one, let me tell you. All right, Kyle, I got your answers. Give me a second. I got to do some math over here. We've got to put this through the John Pod algorithm.
I'm nervous.
So I carry the 2. I'm going to divide by root 3. Going to multiply by pi. And then we're going to adjust for the density of the ashes from a Northern California fire. And I come up with a score. This is a first. This is a first, Kyle. You have done something nobody else has ever done. You have a score of 80. Which, you know, I said before that the highest score you could get was 75, but you got some bonus points. So you actually raised that score. Highest score ever for a thru-hiker.
Wow. Dude, this feels better than hitting 100,000 subscribers, honestly. 80. My goal was to get that 75. Like I said, like in school, if I got a 75, I'd be like pretty okay with it. And
hey, your next video.
Dude, that's a B- right there, if I'm not mistaken. I'll take it.
Your next video on YouTube, I want to see you wearing a hat with 80 on it.
I'll take it, dude. Damn. That is awesome. So you pretty much agreed with all my answers, yeah?
Yeah, you made a lot of sense. You made a lot of sense. And the hiking pole question, you hit every single point. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Dude,
imagine if I wasn't a thru-hiker, then would I have gotten 100? Like, would I have absolutely knocked that out of the ballpark? What do you think?
Like 105, right?
So, yeah, I would have bonus points, A++. Man,
that's right. That's right.
I'm proud.
Just like in college for you.
Yeah, well, no. Definitely wasn't getting. I did okay.
Hey, before we go to a break and hear from the sponsors, why don't we back up just a little bit and tell us about your background, where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies did you play as a kid, and how did you get involved in the thru-hiking cult?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, by the way. Thru-hiking cult. I grew up in Vermont, Burlington, Vermont area. I was a hockey player, dude. I was a baseball player. But then around my sophomore year of high school, about midway through high school, I'd say, I started to get into hiking, and baseball quickly fell to the wayside because I wanted to be outside when it started to get warm in the spring and not be, you know, shagging fly balls in right field or whatever I was doing. And so I went on a day hike one day, just as something to do, just like high school kids, just like, oh, let's just go hike today. And, you know, it was just something to do. I didn't really think much of it, and got above tree line, funny enough, on Mount Mansfield in Vermont, and fell in love with it. That hike was part of the Long Trail. And I think my friend's dad had hiked the Long Trail before. And so I didn't know what it was. I saw the signs for it and stuff. So I was asking him, and he knew a little bit because of his dad. And so he was like, yeah, like, it's like, you know, 200 miles long or whatever, and people hike the entire thing. And I was like, what? Like, that's insane. And so I went home, I started, you know, Googling, YouTubing as the kids do, and discovered videos about the Appalachian Trail. And then I just kind of got obsessed with that. And that's how I got into it. And then I had to wait, you know, a lot of years before I finally got the opportunity to go and do the AT. But I squeezed a few shorter hikes in before then, and ever since then I've just been a hiking nerd. I just got obsessed with it, dude. I don't even know why. I was 16. Like, why are 16-year-olds getting obsessed with through hiking? I don't know, but that's what happened basically.
That is awesome. And if your mind was blown over the 273-mile long trail, what did you think when you realized there was a trail that went for 2,200 miles called the
AT? I thought I was like, I want to do that. Like, or I want to try it. I wasn't like, I'm going to be able to do that, but I wanted to try it. Like, it was, as soon as I learned about it, I don't know why. I think I was just young and searching for a purpose and an identity. And like, man, something about it just struck and it blew my mind. Like you said, like when I learned about this, I was watching all the videos, and back then, this was probably like 2012, 2011. There weren't that many videos like on thru hiking, but what few there were, I was watching them and I was obsessing over them and started to buy some gear and, you know, was asking for gear for my birthday and shit like that. Ooh, sorry. Because I, you know, was in high school and didn't have very much money. And so I just started to accumulate it. And eventually I did the long trail in sections as like my first accomplishment, air quotes, went back a few years later and through hiked it as like a prep for the AT. And then a couple years after that, I finally got down to Springer Mountain and somehow was, you know, super fortunate and was able to complete the whole trail.
All right. And we're going to hear a little bit more about that when we come back from the break. So let's listen to the sponsors. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Thru-hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional.
And welcome back. We're talking to Kyle O'Grady, owner and creator of the Kyle Hates Hiking YouTube channel. And we heard a little bit about your background. We did a couple of segments there. Now we want to get to the nitty gritty of your actual hikes. So I have here that you did the Long Trail in 2016. And half of the Long Trail, for our listeners out there who may not realize this, half of the Long Trail is part of the AT and the other half, the northern half, is not. And so did you do a southbound hike or a northbound hike?
So I did a northbound through hike. The first time I did it, which to be honest with you, I don't think I told you about that in the notes. So I apologize about that. The first time I did it was just a section hike. So that was sometimes north, sometimes south, sometimes 2 days, sometimes a week. But the through hike was proper northbound, started at the Massachusetts border. And I think it took like 21 days or something. And that was like my first like proper through hike, obviously not as long as the AT, but that, it was kind of like a trial run for the AT. And that's also like my home, like I'm from Vermont. So it was cool to kind of just walk the length of my state in one shot as well.
Nice. Now, how would you characterize the Long Trail? If you had to describe the experience to someone who's thinking about doing that.
I'm so biased, dude. I love that trail. Like, obviously that's like where that's the trail that made me fall in love with backpacking and through hiking. So to me, that is the best trail in the world. For other people, I don't know if they would say that, but it does have a great reputation. If I had to describe it, I would say it's brutal in the best way possible. And I can dissect that if you'd like, or we can just let people's imaginations wander.
You know, Kyle, I don't know about you, but I have a fascination with trail names, and we're not going to talk about trail names today, but I've come to approach podcasting and episodes with that philosophy in mind. And I'm always on the lookout for a trail name, so to speak, for the episode. And I think we just stumbled across the episode title, the trail name for the episode, Brutal in the Best Way Possible. I mean, that just really jumps out at me.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet. That sounds like some emo lyrics or something. That's a great episode name. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, brutal in the best way possible, hyphen Kyle O'Grady.
There you go.
And I think the Long Trail, correct me if I'm wrong, was the first long hiking trail in American history.
Yes, that is correct. It was actually the inspiration for the AT, if I'm not mistaken. They say, yeah, it was in Vermont. Like it's kind of crazy. Like I knew that, but like I kind of forget about that sometimes. But like literally, like yeah, like in a way you could say like all of this crazy, you know, culture that's emerged around thru-hiking kind of started, I guess, I don't know if the culture started in Vermont, but it definitely has its roots in Vermont at the very least. So that's pretty cool. I never think about that. I should think about that more. That's something to be proud of.
Absolutely.
Even though I didn't have anything to do with it. My home.
So up until that point, you've done some section hikes, done some shorter hikes, but now you've done the full thing. Looking back, what did you learn about yourself from that through hike of the Long Trail?
The biggest thing I learned is that I was all in on the AT, basically. But other things too, like patience is a big one. That's one of the biggest things that I've learned from hiking. And given that the Long Trail was like my first proper through hike, I'm sure that I became more patient as a result, because it's like, it's not always like super fun, you know, walking all day. And so very often I would be looking forward to getting to camp at the end of the day, or looking forward to the next mountain or town or whatever it is. And sometimes a lot of the time, you just got to be patient and just ride it out. And you can't be so impulsive and just, you know, want it right now. You got to kind of enjoy the ride. And so patience is a big one. And then, like I said, going into the Long Trail, I already knew that I wanted to do the AT, but I wasn't going around telling everybody I'm like 100% going to do the AT yet. After the Long Trail, after that trial run, and honestly, I still remember it so well. Like the day that I finished the Long Trail, I was like, dude, I want to keep going. Like I want to turn around and go right back. Like I had so much fun. And when I finished, the day I finished, I was like, I'm all in on the AT after I graduate college. Like that was the final like nail in the coffin per se. That was the final trial run. Everything went great. I felt great. And I had so much fun that's what pushed me over the edge at the end of the day.
Now, you said quite a few things there that resonated with me. Just want to touch on a few of them. One is that it's not real until you publish it out into the world, right?
When you say, exactly.
That's a whole lot more pressure, right? Other than just keeping it to yourself. Once you say it, then there's some added pressure that and expectations of others that you're going to go do that. The other thing is I like the whole concept about patience, because I think that hiking, trail running, running, so many activities that we do, maybe even some work-related activities, if you are in a hurry and if you're expecting things to get done like right now, you're going to be disappointed. But if you go into it knowing that, hey, I'm going to be out here for a while, this is going to take a while. And you know what? At times it's going to suck. And if you go into it with that attitude, I think there's a higher degree of success, because when your expectations don't match the reality, that's when there's really a disconnect.
I agree with that so much, dude. Like before the AT, I got myself so convinced that this was going to be like the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And like, it was pretty hard. But I took that so seriously, and I think it really paid off. So yeah, the patience thing is interesting. I think another reason, it's a little bit off, not really off topic, but a little bit of a different reason, is when I was getting into hiking, like we just established, I was so young, and I just feel like, maybe this is a generalization, but at least for myself, I'll just speak for myself. When I was like in high school and when I was younger, I was just like very impulsive. And I feel like backpacking and through hiking was really what I needed to kind of like teach me that like, you got to have some patience sometimes in order to have good things come to you. And that was a good lesson for me, and one that I definitely needed. I would have had to learn it one way or another, but backpacking gave me a head start on that, I think.
I love that. Through hiking as a teacher.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So you're successful with the long trail, and now you've got your sights set on the AT. What are your expectations going into the AT?
Man, honestly, my expectation, kind of going back to what I just said a minute ago, was that it was going to be like super, super hard. I hyped myself up so much. I was like, I spent like so much time on the mental preparation for the AT. At that point, I had done the long trail. I'd done quite a bit of other backpacking as well. And so I felt like physically I was good to go. I felt like mentally, well, actually physically, to go back to that, I wasn't sure if I'd be able to, you know, do it for months on end, but I knew that I could string together a couple weeks at the very least of strenuous hiking days and be okay. And so physically I was good to go. Gear wise, I was good to go. I felt like very confident with my gear. And that's a big thing that people struggle with at the start of the AT. A lot of the time, if you've never thru hiked before, never backpacked before, like the gear stuff really throws people off. And so I felt like I was good to go there. So my main expectation was just focused on, this is going to be really hard. I'm going to expect this to be so difficult. I'm going to rise to the occasion. Like, I'm all in, I'm doing this thing. And it turned out it was like really hard, but I think I was, like I said a minute ago, again, I was like so hard on myself when it came to the mental preparation that actually ended up being slightly easier than I think I thought it was going to be, albeit still very, very difficult.
Now, Kyle, any siblings?
Yeah, I have a younger sister.
Younger sister. Does she also thru hike?
No. She's not outdoorsy.
I think that's fascinating that kids grow up in the same household, same environment, and yet they, you know, one of them is like full tilt in the outdoors, and the other one is like, no way.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting, honestly. I never really thought about that, actually. It's bizarre. My parents aren't outdoorsy either. Like, it was just something I fell into, honestly.
So when you head down to Springer Mountain, what is the consensus of your family? Are they, you know, supportive but think you're a little bit crazy, or are they like, Kyle, what are you doing with your life?
They were fully on board. They're still fully on board to this day. I'm so grateful for that, because I know people who have folks back home who just don't understand and aren't supportive. And that is hard. And so I'm so grateful that my family was on board. They actually drove me. I went to Clarkson University in Northern New York, and they picked me up after graduation and drove me all the way from just a 20, 30 miles south of the Canadian border all the way down to Springer Mountain and dropped me off there. And like, so they were fully on board. I think it helped that I had been backpacking for a number of years before that, and it helped that I had the long trail through hike under my belt. And so they were fully supportive, and I can't say it enough. Like, I'm so, so grateful for that. They've been fully supportive with everything when it comes to hiking and my content too, and like all this stuff. And yeah, very, very grateful.
Did they ever say, hey, Kyle, you know, it would have been a lot more thoughtful and considerate if you'd just done a southbound hike?
Well, you know, it still would have been a good 7-8 hours, maybe more, honestly, from Potsdam to Baxter State Park. So it would have been a day shorter, probably, but it still would have been a solid day of driving. So I don't know. They also live in South Carolina, so it was somewhat on the way. I don't know, but they didn't have to do that. So I appreciate it very much. All three of them, my mom, my dad, and my sister.
Wow, what a send-off. Very nice.
Yeah, so it's hard to leave, though, because having my family right there, like, it was kind of emotional starting out, being like, all right, I'll see you guys in a few months, hopefully.
Now, did you convince a buddy to do this with you, or are you going down there by yourself?
I started by myself. But
so what does that take to go on this kind of adventure, a 2,200 mile plus adventure, starting out by yourself, getting dropped off by your family? It's like, bye, see you later. Good luck out there. We'll see you in a few months. I mean, what's going through your head at that point?
I was really nervous at the start. Man, I was so nervous at the start. Not nervous as far as like my safety went or anything like that. I wasn't nervous about being alone. I knew I'd meet people out there, and I did. I met some of my best friends out there, honestly. But I was just nervous because I was like, dude, like, am I really about to commit to this? Like, I've spent years thinking about this. I just graduated college. Like, it's already like a crazy transitional point in my life. And oh man, I was so nervous. It took probably about a week or so before I like really settled in. But that first day, especially, I just like shot up Springer Mountain. When I got to the top, I was just like, man, okay, I need to like try to chill out a little bit. But yeah, it was crazy. I never really thought about quitting, but I will say the only time where I was like, man, I don't know about this was on that very first day climbing up the approach trail, going up Springer Mountain. So before I even got to the AT, I was like, I don't know, this is kind of crazy. And so I was like, I'll give myself a few weeks for sure. And then if I'm really not feeling it, I can always get off. But it didn't take very long before I was back on track, and all that mental preparation came into play and really, really, yeah, kept me on track.
Nice. Now, Kyle, are you familiar with type 2 fun?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? After all these miles.
Did you encounter any type 2 fun on the AT?
Yeah, a lot of it was type 2 fun. Especially on the rainy days and the really, really hot days. And I'm a sweater, dude. So, like, I started late on the AT. I started in mid-May. And so I'm hiking through the South in the middle of the summer. You know, it's June. I'm still in Virginia. And it was hot. It was humid. And I sweat so much. Like, there was days where I've never sweat like this in my life. There was only one day on the PCT where I sweat like this. I think a lot of it has to do with the humidity because it was really hot in the PCT as well. But, excuse me, dude, it was just like completely drenched. I'm not even exaggerating. I exaggerate a lot. I've exaggerated a lot in this podcast, but I'm not exaggerating. It was like I had jumped in a pool. All my clothing were completely soaked through with sweat. My leg hair was just stuck to my body like I had just gotten out of the water. Just totally, totally drenched. And there was a lot of days like that on the AT. And there's nothing fun about that in the moment, but it does make a somewhat entertaining story on a podcast years later. So if that's not type 2 fun, then I don't know what is.
You know, Kyle, I think the jury is still out on the trail name for this episode because, you know, I thought brutal in the best way possible is pretty good, but I've also now heard it's not always super fun. That's kind of an interesting title as well. And now I don't know if you can beat this one, but I'm a sweater. I mean, that just speaks to me.
Dude, are you a sweater too?
Upon occasion, yes. Especially after a hot bowl of chili. My head was
sweating. Yeah. Dude, I'm sweating right now, honestly. I turned my AC off because I wanted to have good audio, obviously. And it's heating up, but
you're feeling the effects.
I'm feeling the effects. Nowhere near as bad as it was on the AT or on the PCT for that matter. Like on the PCT, we had some hot days too. And we'll get into that, I'm sure. But like just the lack of humidity, I think, made me sweat less than I did on the AT. But I was just ripping through electrolytes on both of those trails for sure.
Now, Bill Bryson, in his novel, A Walk in the Woods, about the AT, very, very funny book. He was really concerned prior to about bear encounters. Any similar fears about that? And did you have any animal encounters out there?
I was not worried about bears. Bears, I've never had a bad bear encounter, so they've never scared me. Maybe if I do have a bad one, I'll change my mind. But I wasn't worried about that on the AT. I knew how to bear hang, my food. And I feel like I'm just a loud hiker. Like I must just like stumble on or something because very few bear encounters. On the AT, the only place I saw bears was going through Shenandoah, where there's just a high concentration of them there. So it's pretty much everybody, at least my year, saw bears going through there. But there's so many days where I'd get to camp at the end of the day and my friends would be like, oh, like we saw a bear here, we saw a bear there. The only place I saw them was in Shenandoah. As far as other animal encounters, the sketchiest animal encounter I had was a rattlesnake. I almost stepped on a rattlesnake very early on. It was literally like 50 yards south of the North Carolina-Georgia border. So like I was going along. I knew that I was close. I knew that I was within like a half mile. And so it's like the first state crossing. I was pumped. I was like, dude, I'm doing it. I'm crossing the state for the first time on the AT. And had my headphones in. I was rocking out. And I'd also never seen a rattlesnake in my life because, like I said, I'm in Vermont. There's really no rattlesnakes there. And so, dude, this thing just like, I just missed it. And like, I almost stepped on it. It coiled up. I didn't know what the hell to do. I mean, I jumped back. But after that, I was like so shaken that I didn't even want to just go around it. Like, you know, you would normally do, just give it a safe distance and go around it. I didn't even want to do that because I was like, what if there's another one like off the trail and I can't see it? I was so freaked out. And my friend that I'd been hiking with a little bit was, I don't know, I knew he was somewhat close to me, behind me. And so I was like, I'm just going to wait for him. And we'll figure this out together. And so I sat there and that rattlesnake stayed on the trail, coiled up, rattling for 30 minutes. It did not stop. Like full on listening to that bone chilling rattle for 30 minutes straight. First time I'd ever seen one in my life. Super, super sketchy. And I was aware of them like before I went on the AT, but that was the moment where I was like, okay, I need to be careful about these. And I've seen many rattlesnakes since then, and I haven't had another encounter that was that close, thankfully. But that one left a lasting impression, like definitely not a fan of rattlesnakes.
Yikes. Now, if you're like me, after you come back from a hike, you spend a lot of time telling stories. You talk to family, friends. In fact, you know, you eventually go to family gatherings and they see you coming and they head the other direction because they don't want to hear any more hiking stories. Now, is there a particular story from the AT that you tell most often?
Oh, man. Honestly, that rattlesnake one's a big one. Oh, man, there's so many. Honestly, there's a story that happened on the AT, but wasn't on my AT through hike. It was back from when I was younger and kind of first getting into it, doing sections of the long trail. There was a story there that happened. But honestly, my biggest go-to story from my AT through hike specifically is probably the rattlesnake story I literally just told. But I'm happy to tell. I'm happy to just pick another random one from the AT if you'd like.
Well, how about if you ever found yourself in a situation where you're like, what am I doing out here? What was the lowest of lows where you considered getting off trail?
Like I said,
what kept you on trail?
Like I said, I never really considered getting off trail other than that, like flash in my mind the very first day, but there was low points for sure. Let's see here. A lot of the low points were going through Virginia when it was just really hot. And like I said, I was sweating so much. It made me more determined, honestly, to just like keep on going. But that was some low points. Honestly, Maine was a low point. Again, definitely wasn't thinking about getting off at that point because I was so close. But it was definitely the hardest part of the trail for me because like I came so far at that point. I was, you know, up to 2,000 miles into the trail. And so you think, oh, well, you know, it's just another 190 or whatever it is left. So what's that compared to 2000? But you've also hiked 190 miles over and over and over. So you know how much goes into hiking 190 miles. And it's not easy. Even if you've done it a lot, you know, building up to this last time, it's still not easy. And so Maine was really difficult mentally. I was starting to just be like ready to go home, I think. And that coupled with some pretty challenging terrain, especially in the southern part of the state, was very, very difficult. So I know that's a little more general than like a specific moment. I'm trying to think if there's any like specific, I can't really think of any specific low moments, but yeah, just those were the,
let's talk about that last 190 miles as you're approaching Katahdin. I mean, what's going through your mind on that last day? And did you suffer from post-trail depression afterwards?
Yeah. So the last day of the trail was incredible, dude. Honestly, I don't think I'm ever going to have another like day like that in my entire life. Like first through hike finished, one I had been obsessed with for many, many years, one that I wasn't sure I was going to be able to accomplish, but wanted to try for many, many years. And so it was kind of funny, like climbing up Katahdin that last day, I felt like I should be like overcome with the sense of accomplishment and the sense of joy. And I didn't really feel it climbing up. And I was starting to like get kind of like psyched out about it. Like I was just super in my head, like, why am I not feeling more like, and then the closer I'd get to the top of the mountain, I'd be like, the more like upset with myself and confused. And then as soon as I saw the sign, like straight up, it all just came out. Like I started crying. It all just came out at once. And it was such an incredible moment. Like I said, I'm never going to have another moment like that in my entire life, I don't even think. And so that was incredible. And then post-trail, I wouldn't say I had post-trail depression. I definitely, you know, definitely wasn't like the best time afterwards. Going back to work, I was working as a software developer at the time. And so I went from finishing Mount Katahdin, hadn't showered in a long time, full-on beard, full-on hiker trash, to like clean shaven in a cubicle within like a 2-week time period. So that was, you know, not the best, but like, I'm not gonna say it wasn't depression, you know, like my life was pretty damn good and I'm very grateful for it. So, you know, after a couple months, I got pretty well adjusted. I think if I had exercised and ate a little bit better after the trail, that would have helped. That's like, I did very well about that after the PCT because I learned my lesson the first time. And so No post-trail depression. Wasn't the best time, but also it wasn't that bad.
Got it. Now let's transition to the PCT. When did you know? At what point did it happen on the AT, or was it after the AT that you knew that you were gonna attempt the PCT?
It was shortly after the AT that I knew. I wouldn't even say it was specifically the PCT, but I knew I wanted to triple crown, and so. It didn't take long, but it took, you know, it was a number of years. I did the AT in 2018. I attempted the PCT in 2022. And so it wasn't like a rush, you know, I need to go to the PCT ASAP. Like a lot of people will finish one through hike and be like, dude, I'm doing another one next year. And I didn't feel that type of urgency, but I knew I wanted to do it for sure. And then it just took, it probably would have been earlier. It probably would have been 2021 if COVID hadn't happened, but that kind of pushed it back. But I knew I wanted to do it. I knew I wanted to do the CDT as well shortly after the AT.
When is the CDT taking place?
I don't know, man. I haven't even finished the PCT yet. So, sometime within the next few years, I think, but no set date at the moment. But once I get the PCT done, it's like, I'm 2/3 of the way there. So I got to do it.
Yeah. You know, I've talked to a number of people who have done two of the three and have no desire to do the third one. I think
those really
are like sociopaths. I think if you do two right. of the three, I mean, the pressure to do the third is just got to be incredible. But these people didn't feel that pressure, which
I'm with you, man. I know people, I'm sure you do too, that have done one of the trails multiple times, but they haven't done any of the other ones. And that's a little crazy to me too, to be honest. But hey, it's different for everybody. So, you know,
that's right.
Teach their own.
Different for everybody. I want you to think now about your experience on the AT and the PCT combined. And I want you to think of your most typical hiker trash moment. Do we want to start off with a definition of what do you have? I mean, what is hiker trash? Do you have to do something to earn that title? And where do you fall in that spectrum?
What is hiker trash?
Yeah. If you're looking at, go ahead and look at your monitor.
See it on the hat.
You see the hat. So how do you get to wear a hat like this? I feel like an imposter sometimes. So
no, I think I've never thought about this before. You got me stumped a little bit. I can definitely think of some hiker trash moments that I've had, but it's like, how do I know I've had those hiker trash moments if I can't even define it, right?
Well, maybe we start with the moments. Maybe we start with you said you've had some hiker trash moments. Maybe that'll help us define it.
I think I might have it actually. I think I might have a definition.
Okay.
It just came to me. If I can get it out, we'll see. So I think hiker trash could be defined as like doing some stuff that normally you wouldn't do, just like some trashy stuff, and doing it with no shame because you're a thru hiker and this is just what you do. I don't know. How's that?
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. IB Tat, his definition of hiker trash is, in order to wear that badge, you had to spend at least one night in some kind of bathroom, whether it be a porta potty or you know, a pit toilet, something.
That's a great definition. Although if that was the definition, I am not hiker trash because I've yet to do that. I almost did once on the AT, but the lights came on and they were motion censored, so we had to move because we wouldn't have been able to sleep. We would have slept fine in the bathroom if it weren't for the lights. But I love IPTAT, by the way. IPTAT's the man.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a good definition for sure. I'm if I had to bet, I would say that more thru hikers have done that than haven't done that.
I like your definition as well. I mean, IPTAT, that's a definition. It's not the definition. That's right, his definition. Right. Let's hear about a couple of your moments.
All right. So the first two that come to mind are both from the AT, and then I can try to think of one from the PCT too. But from the AT, the first moment where I ever truly felt like hiker trash was very early on in the AT. I was hitching from Newfound Gap into Gatlinburg, Tennessee, so in the middle of the Smoky Mountains, and we got picked up. It was like a rainy day, not a great day, cold. This guy in a pickup truck pulls over. He'd just been camping, and he's like, "Yeah, you guys can hop in the back." And he's like, "Oh, sorry about the trash bags back there. I just got done camping." And so we get in the back of this guy's truck, and it's just a cooler, some dirty camping equipment, and just trash bags. And so we're like sitting on these trash bags. And so there's a connection to hiker trash. And then about halfway down the mountain, because it's a pretty long hitch for AT standards, he opens like the little back window of the pickup truck. And he's just like, "Hey, there's some beer left in that cooler if you guys want some." And we're like, "All right." So we're in Tennessee. We're sitting on trash bags and we're drinking beer in the back of a pickup truck. And that felt pretty hiker trash.
That's a good moment right there.
It was a good one. And honestly, I think the biggest one probably ever that I can think of, at least off the top of my head here, was in New Hampshire. Me and some friends, we went to this little town called, it's like not even a town. Is it Bartlett, New Hampshire, in the White Mountains? It's at the intersection of 302 and the road that goes up to Pinkham Notch. I can't remember the name of the little town. Is it Carroll, maybe? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Near Jackson, New Hampshire, anyways. There's a Dairy Queen there, which I think has closed down since, because I've driven by a few times and it's been closed. It's been a little bit since I've gone back now. But anyways, there's a Dairy Queen there. We were going to take a zero the next day. We got in, you know, around dinner time. And we didn't want to pay for a hotel for two nights because, you know, by the time we finished eating, it was starting to get dark. And it was like, are we going to pay for the hotel across the street for two nights when pretty much all we're going to do is just go to bed and we know we're going to take a zero tomorrow anyway? And so we were like, what we're going to do is we're going to book the room for tomorrow night. And instead of staying there tonight too, we're going to save that money by walking outside the Dairy Queen, banging a right, walking into the woods and just setting up our stuff there. And so we slept behind a Dairy Queen for a night and it was awesome. It's a little bit misleading because this is in the White Mountains. So it's not like it's a city and we're like sleeping next to a dumpster or anything. Like there was a patch of woods behind it, but we slept behind the Dairy Queen. We hit it again in the morning and then we got to the hotel and got clean.
Nice. Sleeping behind a Dairy Queen is also an acceptable definition for hiker trash.
Yeah. Or any, we'll extend it to any fast food restaurant. How about that?
Dairy Queen has a particular ring that I really appreciate, but yeah, we can do that too.
Yeah. It's a good one.
All right, Kyle, take us through what ended your PCT hike.
Yeah. So fires were the big thing. So we got to Stevens Pass in Washington State. And at this point, we had to skip a few other sections of the trail. We had skipped from Mount Shasta up to Ashland, Oregon, which was a good, I don't remember off the top of my head, but well over 100 miles, maybe like 150 miles, 160, something like that, maybe a little bit more. And then we also had to skip a 60-mile section of the trail in Oregon that was closed because of a fire. And so at this point, we had already skipped a few times, which sucks. It doesn't feel good, especially coming from my AT mentality, which was hike the entire trail. And that was my goal with the PCT too, however unrealistic that was. And we get up to Leavenworth, Washington, Stevens Pass area. And there's more fires popping up. A few days earlier, we had learned that the Canadian border of all places was closed due to a fire. the one place it had finally felt like I was getting some momentum again after kind of the blows that we took in skipping the previous times. And I was like, well, you know what? At least we're going to get to hike all of Washington. At least we're going to get to that Canadian border. And then we learned the Canadian border is closed. And so that was a real bummer, but we still kept going. And we're like, I guess we'll just hike as far as we can. But the end became very unclear at that point. And so we get to Stevens Pass, and now there's even more fires popping up. In fact, when we were about to go hike out from Stevens Pass, the road on the other side of the pass was closed because of a fire, and it was getting real smoky. And we saw some hikers. The trail was still open, but we saw some hikers turning around actually and coming back down. Because they said it was pretty bad. There were people that kept going too. I know that for a fact. Like I said, it wasn't closed, but it was just very dicey. And we knew some people that were ahead of us that had gotten out or that had gotten off trail at Stehekin. We knew a couple people that had kept going to Rainy Pass. The end destination at this point had just ceased to exist. We didn't know how much further we were going to go. And it was smoky, and it was just like, man, it just didn't really feel worth it to continue. And there was also another big thing. I was hiking with a guy named Brandon at that point, and his parents had flown up from Texas to surprise him. I had helped coordinate that with them. And so in Leavenworth, they had picked us up, and they had, you know, taken us to an Airbnb and like spoiled the crap out of us for a day. And they were planning on heading back to the airport to fly home that next day. And they were the ones that dropped us back off at Stevens Pass. And when we got up there and we see these hikers turning around and a bunch of other hikers confused about what to do, just like we were, and we're hearing about hikers who had gotten off up ahead of us and we didn't know where we're going to end. And we have Brandon's parents sitting there ready to take us to the airport. So no hitching, no buses or trains or anything to get to Seattle, just a ride straight there. All those factors combined, we just were like, man, we got to come back. Like, we got to come back. We'll do this next beautiful section when the weather's better the fire conditions are better and when the borders actually open. And so that's the story. Real bummer, but at the end of the day, I'm just glad that I was safe and I'll be back to finish it up.
Yeah, you got to make some tough decisions out there. What was Brandon's trail name?
His trail name was Phoenix. It's kind of funny though. I just called him Brandon the whole time, basically. I think I met him before he got the trail name, so that helps. Because you know, I first knew him as Brandon. There's other people that I first knew them by their trail names, and I still call them by their trail names even off trail. So it really just depends. But yeah, Brandon was Brandon to me.
Got it. Now it seems to me, I'm not sure if I should trust my memory on this or not, but it seems to me the last 4 or 5 years, there have been a lot more fires in the northern part of the PCT. Is that just a
southern
new
part
way of life? Is that, it's just a new way of life with the way things are, or has this always been happening? Am I mistaken?
I mean, fires have always been happening for sure. I'm not an expert on this. I just wanted to say that too. But it does seem like the last few years have been bad. We'll see how this year is. Because I know California's gotten a ton of snow this year.
Yeah.
I've got a friend that lives in the Tahoe area, and like some of the posts he's been making, just crazy snow.
It is insane right now in the Sierras and the mountains in California.
Are you out in California?
Yeah, yeah. My stepmother actually lives up in Big Bear, and or in Arrowhead, and she's trapped. She's stuck there. There's so much snowfall, they can't plow the roads. She's got enough food.
Oh, dude, I heard about that. Actually, I heard about that. Just today, I think I heard about that.
Snowpack in the Sierras. It is going to be a dicey summer in the Sierras with the river crossings and everything else that goes with that snowpack.
So at the very least, let's hope it makes a difference on the fires. Honestly, you being out there, you'd probably be better equipped to answer this question than I would, honestly, as a native East Coaster.
Well, I'll just stipulate, it seems like there's more fires recently than there have been, and maybe bigger fires that have had more impact what's happening out there. So
yeah, it sucks, dude. It freaking sucks. Like even hiking through areas that have been burned in previous fires, like I'm sure you've hiked through burned areas living there now. Like, man, it's super depressing. Honestly, like I hate to say it, but you know, active fires aside, like the burned areas, like, man, like people talk about how beautiful the PCT is. And it is beautiful, but I feel like a lot of time people are like, oh, like the PCT is so much more beautiful than the AT. I think like the most beautiful piece or most beautiful parts of the PCT are more beautiful than the AT, but the bad parts are worse than the AT. Those burn zones, man, they suck. And there's only more and more of them, unfortunately. So
agreed.
Yeah, they're a bummer.
Yeah. Kyle, I feel like we have just scratched the surface with you. I know we've got, we had some other hikes that we wanted to talk about, but I'm going to get from you right now a promise to come back on the podcast to do a second episode and cover some more ground here. I want to hear more about the PCT, more about some of the smaller hikes that you've done, and also talk about, you know, what's next for you. But we are going to move on. Is that all right?
That is totally fine. That's totally fine.
All right. Hey, Kyle, you know where we are right now?
Is it the pro tip?
The pro tip insight of the week.
That is right, Kyle. You get extra points. You're like an 85 now. You're amazing. You're killing this.
The solid B. Perfect.
Solid B. All right. Time for the pro tip insight of the week, where you get to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. So what do you have for us?
Okay. Carry and if you're using smart water bottles like this right here, which a lot of people do, carry an extra bottle cap, because if you think about it, if you lose this bottle cap right here, this bottle is almost useless. You know, around camp, maybe you could still, but when it comes to hiking, you know, if it's sloshing around in your backpack, this bottle is useless. And this little bottle cap, it's clear, it's tiny, it's very easy to lose. Carry an extra bottle cap, because it's almost a safety thing, dude. Nobody talks about this. More people need to talk about this. Like, it's almost a safety thing. If you lose like a huge, if you're in the desert or something, you lose like a huge portion of your water capacity, that's not good. Carry an extra bottle cap. That's a pro tip. And it's funny.
That's some wisdom right there.
It's funny. I actually, for some reason, I've always done this. I can't remember if I came up with it myself or someone else did it, and I was like, that's a good idea, but I always carried one, and then I never lost them until a hike I did very recently. I finally lost a bottle cap for the first time, and I was very glad that all these years, all these miles, I've carried an extra one, because
it all paid
off. I needed it.
It all paid off.
And if you cut your toothbrush handle in half with your chainsaw, I mean, that counteracts the extra ounces of carrying that extra bottle cap.
It's probably about the same weight. You got a point.
Yep. Okay. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Kyle. I want to thank you for joining us this week. Kyle, once again, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media? Where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
So Instagram is at Kyle Hates Hiking. YouTube is Kyle Hates Hiking. If you go on there, type that in, you'll find my cringy thumbnails and my face just all over your feed. And then my podcast, Trail Tales, you can find that on whatever app you're listening to this. It's the one with the blue cover, and TikTok. Ugh, gross. But yeah, I'm on TikTok. Don't follow me on TikTok. Delete your TikTok. And yeah, I think that's everything, dude. Thank you so much. This was so fun. Like, I love the format here. It's way different than all the other podcasts I've been on.
Thanks,
so,
Kyle.
You got a good thing going.
Thank you, sir. Hey, remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and I share your opinion on TikTok. A little bit cringy there. And if you have comments or clips you want to share with me, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Hey, Kyle, we're also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, movie, documentary, website, some sort of outdoor media that'll keep our listeners connected to the trail. We're calling this our Adventure Media Recommendation. Any recommendations for us?
Can I share a YouTube channel?
Absolutely.
Now
we'll stipulate they should tune into your YouTube channel, but do you have something else besides that one?
I have way better recommendations than mine, to be honest. I would say IBTAB, but since he's already been on the show, I'm hoping that your listeners are already familiar with him. I think his channel is super underrated. But another channel,
he's one of my mom's favorites. Mom is a subscriber to Ivy Tat's YouTube channel.
His production level and the amount of work he does on his videos while through hiking is insane. I don't know how he does it.
Crazy.
But if I could plug another one, because I'm assuming your listeners are already familiar with Ivy Tat, go follow Taylor, the New Hampshire hiker, on YouTube. She thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail in 2021, I believe. And she's doing another long thru-hike this year as well. She hasn't announced which one yet, but it's going to be sweet. And so definitely go check her channel out. She's awesome. She's wholesome. She's way better at hiking and making videos than I am. So go subscribe to her channel. She's a close friend of mine too. So go check her out.
Nice. What was her name one more time?
Taylor, the New Hampshire hiker. That's New Hampshire. I don't even know what it is, dude.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. If you just type in Appalachian,
is that slang for New Hampshire?
It's like a, I think it's like a New England accent thing, like New Hampshire, something like that. In my part of New England, we don't really have accents, but in New Hampshire and especially Massachusetts, that's definitely not the case. So if you just type in Appalachian Trail Taylor, it'll probably come up, or you can take a shot at spelling it and hopefully you'll do better than I did getting through the first two letters and then messing it up.
Just spell it like it sounds. New Hampshire.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What did we miss tonight?
Dude, you didn't ask me about my trail name. No, I'm just kidding. I had to do that. For everybody listening, he asked me if there was anything I didn't want to talk about before. Or no. You had included the trail name story in the notes, which is very reasonable, to be clear. But I'm just really sick of talking about my trail name, so I told him to take it out of it. So I had to make fun of him a little bit there.
Maybe next episode we'll learn what it is. We'll keep that in suspense.
We could do it. I think you got it all, man. Like this was awesome. So I don't think there's anything else. I'm very grateful to be on the show.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Kyle. That is a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family?
No, I think we got it all. We already talked about my family, how much I appreciate them.
Hey, that's another Taylor first, Kyle. You know, not only did your score go up in the hiking pool, you also are the first person to ever not have a shout out whatsoever.
I mean, there's so many people that I owe shout outs to that I can't even begin to wrap my head around. Yeah. Around all of them.
Okay. Hey, well, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you spent the previous night sleeping behind a Dairy Queen. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.